Don't be afraid of the dark. Just relax and let the darkness fall over you.
Welcome to Afraidish, a podcast where every four episodes, we venture into a new state and take a deep dive into the history and paranormal while enjoying some tasty adult beverages. From ghost sightings to hauntings, urban legends and cryptids, let's get weird and afraid-ish together. Hello, I'm Paul.
And I'm Ashley.
And welcome to episode 11, or episode 3 of Kentucky. It's been a while.
3 already?
Yeah.
Wow. I thought this was episode 2.
No. Yep, we're actually on the 3rd episode of Kentucky.
Woohoo! I did not realize we were already on episode 3.
Yep.
That's what happens when you dance with Mary Jane every night.
Yeah. Anyways, sorry that it's so late. But life happens.
It's my fault. I've been having a passionate affair. I've been in an on again, off again romance for the last 9 years with crochet.
Yeah.
And I picked it back up again recently, and I have not stopped long enough to do any research. So, my bad.
It's fine. I got a long story today anyways.
Whew.
Let's go ahead and get started. Let's start off with another 5 fun facts about Kentucky.
You need like a sound effect for 5 fun facts. Yeah,
I'll work on that. Number 1, Fleming County is recognized as the covered bridge capital of Kentucky. At one time, there were more than 400 covered bridges in the area, but now only 13 have been preserved.
Does Ichabod Crane know? I don't know. Whenever I think of covered bridges, I straight up, Sleepy Hollow. That's immediately.
Number 2, Covington's Cathedral Basilica of the Assumption is home to the world's largest hand-blown glass window, which is an astounding 24 feet by 67 feet.
Oh.
It is a beautiful rendition of the Council of Ephesus, including 134 life-sized figures. The church itself is breathtaking, with a total of 82 shimmering stained glass windows, aka works of art.
Wow. Way to go, Kentucky, ripping off all of Europe.
Pretty much. Number 3. One of the rarest sightings to see happens in Cumberland Falls on the Cumberland River near Corbin. Here you might spy a moonbow, a rainbow made from the light reflected off of the moon.
Ooh!
On clear nights, when the moon is full and nearly full, you can see a moonbow in the fall spray.
Can we go to there on the next full moon and have us a little moonbow party?
That would be fun. The only other place on Earth you can consistently see this amazing natural phenomenon is Victoria Falls on the Zambia-Zimbabwe border.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Fascinating. I love waterfalls. I don't know if you know that about me.
I like waterfalls.
Yeah.
Don't go chasing waterfalls.
Oh, no.
Anyways, number 4. Kaylin's restaurant in Louisville. Claims to have invented the cheeseburger in 1934, although a Denver drive-in called Humpty Dumpty's patented it a year later.
Is that place still open? Can we go there?
I don't know.
I want to go eat at Humpty Dumpty's.
Anyways, so supposedly Kaylin's restaurant invented the cheeseburger, but of course...
Allegedly.
Since they didn't patent it, Humpty Dumpty's... Yeah, took it.
So Humpty Dumpty Edison'd Kaylin's?
Yep. They sure did.
Damn it.
Yeah, hopefully people get that reference.
I hope so. Thomas Edison stole from everybody, but mostly Nikola Tesla.
Yeah, basically, he's like, everybody do the work for me while I take all the credit.
Yup.
Anyways, number 5. And what goes better with a cheeseburger than a Pepsi? which is my favorite.
Disgusting.
Soda. It's my favorite soda. Anyways, Pikeville, Kentucky leads the nation in per capita Pepsi consumption.
Oh, you would be so happy there. I would literally eat my own foot.
Oh, calm down. You drink Pepsi Zero.
When I have to. I don't like it.
Anyways, so that's the five fun facts about Kentucky.
Fun!
All right, so this is going to be an episode about UFOs.
That was my X-Files song.
I love the X-Files. Love the X-Files. So,
yes, I am Fox Mulder.
Have you ever asked yourself, are we alone in the universe?
Every fucking day.
How could we be alone in this vast universe?
We're not.
Out of all the galaxies, out of all the planets and the stars out there, couldn't there be more living creatures other than us?
Mathematically, there literally has to be.
Yeah. Aliens, extraterrestrials, Martians, little green men, the Greys, whatever you want to call them, there has to be something or someone else out there. From small bacteria to highly advanced beings with technology to travel through space and potentially visit our planet.
Hmm.
Which I kind of think like Men in Black, the movie.
Uh-huh.
I kind of think that could be potentially kind of sort of true. I don't know.
Do you think Michael Jackson was really trying to get in?
Yeah, and Elvis just went home.
Uh-huh.
So. Here's a story about a spaceship and 12 little men. This is the original story published on August 22nd, 1955 by the Kentucky New Era about the little men that allegedly landed in the Kelly community on August 21st, 1955.
Wait, on my birthday?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Anyway, all kinds of investigations were going on today in connection with the bizarre story of how a spaceship carrying 12 to 15 little men landed in the Kelly community early last night and battled occupants of a farmhouse. Most officials of the probes were reportedly being staged by the Air Force. More than a dozen state, county, and city officers from Christian and Hopkins counties went to the scene between 11 p.m. and midnight and remained until after 2 a.m. without seeing anything either to prove or disprove the story about the ship and its occupants. The farmhouse is located on Old Madisonville Road, about 8 miles north of Hopkinsville. The property is occupied by Cecil Lucky Sutton, one of those who reported experiencing last night's phenomena. There were some 10 or 12 persons in the house, including several children, but investigating officers were not able to determine exactly how many of those present actually claimed to have seen any of the little men from the spaceship.
Wow.
The only other person whom officers quoted directly was identified as Billy Ray Taylor. One account said Taylor is a visitor from Pennsylvania, which recently had a similar report of a spaceship. Neither Sutton or Taylor was home when officers returned to the scene this morning.
Oh, okay. Can we just pause for a second? Only two people out of, what, did it say 12?
10 or 12, yeah.
Only two people reported seeing. Like, if this was something that was really happening, all of the people in the house, like, the kids would be waking up.
They all saw it.
It's
just two out of the 10 or 12 weren't home when the officers returned the next morning.
Oh, I got confused.
It's okay. So, the story broke around 11 o'clock last night when two cars, one bearing a Pennsylvania license, drove up to Hopkinsville's police headquarters. Officers then at the station said the two autos contained at least five adults and several children. All appeared highly excited. Spokesman for the crowd told of how something resembling a spaceship or flying saucer had landed at the back of their house near Kelly, and 12 or 15 men, who appeared to be about 4 feet tall, had got out of the ship and come up to the house and done battle with the occupants.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like somebody was high.
We need help, one of the men said. We've been fighting with them for nearly 4 hours. Four city police, Chief Russell Greenwell, T.C. Gross, Doris Francis, and Gray Salter, drove to the scene to see about the little men. By radio, contact they made with State Troopers R.N. Ferguson Jr. and G.W. Riley and Deputy Sheriff George Batts, all of whom joined the motorcade to Kelly in their own vehicles. Four MPs also went. The radio discussions also brought two Hopkins County deputy sheriffs and at least three state troopers from the station at Madisonville. First arrivers found the scene deserted. The two cars which had brought the report to Hopkinsville did not return to the Kelly farm until after officers had arrived and looked the situation over. Officers reported they found no tracks of little men, nor was there any mark indicating anything had landed at the described spot behind the house. There was a hole in the screen at the window through which occupants said a shot had been fired at one of the strange little men. Both Chief Greenwell and Deputy Sheriff Batts said they got approximately this story from the still terrified and excited Sutton and Taylor families. So, at about 7 p.m., one of the men went out of the house to get a bucket of water. He saw what looked like a flying saucer come over the trees and land in a field at a point about a city block behind the house. There was no explosion, only a semi-hissing sound, and the watcher returned to the house with a bucket of water. A short time later, somebody reported some little men with big heads and long arms were approaching the house. The men were described as having huge eyes and hands out of proportion to their small bodies. The visitors were wearing what looked like a metal plate.
Oh.
The men got their guns, a shotgun for Sutton and a .22 caliber target pistol for Taylor. By and by, one of the little men pressed his face against the window, and the shotgun fired through the window. The face disappeared. The man decided to go outside and see if the visitor had been hit. Taylor was in front, and when he emerged from the front door, a huge hand reached down from the low roof above the door and grabbed him by the hair. He pulled away, and the two men went out of the house. One of the strange little men was in a nearby tree, another on top of the house. A blast from Sutton's shotgun knocked another one of the men down, but he did not appear hurt. He disappeared into the darkness.
Wow.
Taylor reportedly opened fire on other members of the invading party, also with little effect.
Why are you I don't know. Like, what if they were just coming to be like, hey, we come in peace, and these guys are just blowing their heads off? I'd fight back, too.
Yeah. The battle went on for some time. When the occupants of the house saw their chance, they jumped into their cars and drove to Hopkinsville for help. Deputy Sheriff Batts said the men told him that in all they fired up about four boxes of .22 pistol shells. The officer quoted a neighbor saying he heard shooting over at the Suttons but distinguished only about four shots and mistook them for firecrackers. Which, why would you shoot firecrackers in the middle of the night?
If they said they emptied four boxes of shells, but yeah. The neighbor said he could really only hear four shots.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
And mistook them for firecrackers. Like, I get why, you can't see them, but I get why someone would want to set off firecrackers at night. Let's blow shit up.
Yeah. Most of the officers remained at the site for more than 2 hours. During that period, there were approximately 25 persons at the scene. The only excitement during the period the officers were there came when an MP happened to step on a cat's tail while walking in the darkness near the house. The cat let out a squall, and for a few seconds, there was much activity and scurrying around on the part of those present. Two officers who returned to the Kelly area early this morning reported hearing that the little men had reappeared around the Sutton home around 3:30 a.m.
Jesus.
Other investigators who went to Kelly later during the morning said they were told Sutton and Taylor had gone to Evansville today. Officers who visited the scene during last night's excitement were reluctant to express any opinion today regarding the reported invasion of Kelly. All officials appear to agree that there was no drinking involved, which is surprising for Kentucky. The only outspoken comment came from Frank Dudas, city police desk sergeant, who was not on duty last night and had not visited the scene so far. He said, "I think the whole story is entirely possible." Sergeant Dudas was one of the city policemen who reported seeing three flying saucers early one morning last summer. He said, "I know I saw them. If I saw them, the Kelly story certainly could be true." So that's the original article the day after the incident.
Wow.
The police interviewed other nearby farms. All reported strange lights, unknown spooky sounds, and gunfire.
Mm.
The gunfire, which was described as coming from the Sutton farm, the combination of stories by other farmers only proved to further collaborate with the initial family's concerns.
Wow. Okay, so the one guy that was reported in the newspaper wasn't the only farmer that they interviewed.
Right.
Okay.
A strange greenish glow found around the area where the goblins were thought to be wounded was tested and labeled as "could not be determined."
The goblins?
That's what they look like. I'll have pictures on the social media.
Oh, there's pictures?
Of what they supposedly... They're like...
Renderings?
Yeah, sketches and okay. Whatnot. The family was deemed both sane and competent, with no desire for media attention, nor interest in exploiting the incident for publicity and notoriety. Still, over the years, it has been featured on several television shows and specials, including Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh!
Yeah, I like that show.
Yeah.
In the following days, after radio stations and newspapers, including the New York Times, reported the incident, hundreds of curiosity seekers descended on the farm, often ridiculing the Suttons as ignorant or fraudulent. Yeah.
When, just leave people alone.
Yeah. When no trespassing signs proved useless at discouraging them, the family tried charging admission, 50 cents for entering the grounds, $1 for information, and $10 for taking pictures.
Oh.
After that, skeptics blasted them as fortune-seeking fabulous. I mean, if people are going to be on your property anyway.
Right. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Pretty much. As the Kelly story spread into the world, it took on a life of its own. The number of little men grew to a dozen or more. A few years later, the little metallic men were conflated with an Eastern Kentucky woman's report of a flying saucer and a 6-foot-tall man in green, helping launch the myth of the little green men. Here's Glennie Lankford's firsthand account of the encounter reported in the Project Blue Book case file. So the names are redacted in this case file, but I know at least one, which is Glennie Lankford's.
Okay.
My name is redacted, which is Glennie Lankford, age 50, and I live at redacted Hopkinsville, Route 6, Kentucky. On Sunday night, August 21st, 1955, about 10:30 p.m., I was walking through the hallway, which is located in the middle of my house, and I looked out the back door south and saw a bright silver object about 2.5 feet tall appearing around. I became excited and did not look at it long enough to see it if it had any eyes or move. I was about 15 or 20 feet from it. I fell backward and then was carried into the bedroom. My two sons, redacted, age 25, and his wife, redacted, age 29, redacted, age 21, and his wife, redacted, age 27, and their friends, redacted, age 21, and his wife, age 18, were all in the house and saw this little man that looked like a monkey.
In the house?
In the house. About 3:30 a.m., I was in my bedroom and looked out the north window and saw a small silver shining object about 2.5 feet tall that had its hands on the screen looking in. I called for my sons and they shot at it and it left. I was about 60 feet from it this time. I did not see it anymore. I have read the above statement, and it is true to the best of my knowledge and belief.
Wow.
Witness John E. Albert, certified true copy, Charles N. Kirk, First Lieutenant, USAF, and all that.
Wow.
So, while the incident eventually attracted the attention of the Air Force UFO Investigation Program, or Project Blue Book, documents suggested that its team never officially pursued the matter. Beyond checking in with their Fort Campbell counterparts, who had been briefly at the scene for the first night, one of the most thorough investigations of the Kelly incident was undertaken in 1956 by ufologist Isabel Davis, and published several decades later by the Center for UFO Studies, a group founded by astronomer Dr. J. Allen Hynek, Project Blue Book's civilian investigator. Her nearly 200-page report, co-written with Ted Blocher, includes detailed maps, drawings, documentary records, summaries for similar accounts around the world, and interviews with several Sutton family members and police investigators.
Wow.
Davis summarized the latter's concern about the lack of physical evidence, but to her reckoning, none of the possible explanations, a deliberate hoax, a publicity play, group hallucinations, made sense. While questions arose about whether the young men were exaggerating, possibly fueled by hidden stores of liquor, Davis's strong impression after meeting Mrs. Lankford was one of the somber, nonsense matriarch who abhorred the limelight and had no reason to lie. None of the witnesses, Davis noted, had any history of making preposterous allegations.
Well,
in 2006, Joe Nickel, senior research fellow of the International Committee for Skeptical Inquiry and a self-styled paranormal investigator, reviewed the accumulated evidence in an article entitled Siege of the Little Green Men, the 1955 Kelly, Kentucky incident. In it, he raised suspicion about what he called Billy Taylor's embroidered testimony. He matched Taylor's UFO sighting with similar reports from that day, which suggested a small meteor in the vicinity. As for the little men, Nickel floated an explanation used for other alien encounter stories, owls.
What?
Yes. In particular, the great horned owl, aka the hoot owl, has long wings that could be mistaken for arms, along with talons, yellow eyes, long ears, and round head that might also match the little men description. As for their metallic shine, Nickel suggests they could have easily been reflecting moonlight. Which, I doubt that an owl is going to put their face against a window.
Yeah, I don't see an owl behaving like that.
Yeah. But while hoot owls are known to be active at dusk and extremely aggressive when defending their nest, some investigators question characterizations of the creature as hostile. To some, their behavior that night and Kelly appear to simply be curious. Fun fact, the game character Pokemon Sableye is based on the Kelly Hopkinsville Encounters creatures, aka goblins. In the game, the gremlins walk in the same swaying motion as described by the original witnesses. The encounter is also the basis for It Came From Kentucky by Annoyance Theater's musical based in Chicago, Illinois.
Wow.
The fact that they had a spooky alien encounter near the peaceful towns of Hopkinsville and Kelly means anything is possible in Kentucky. No,
this is true.
Yes. No harm was done to any involved, but just the observation itself could make things very strange.
Interesting.
Descendants of the original occupants are usually hesitant to speak of it, but those that have stated that it was very real to their relatives. Relatives of the residents described the look of fear and the tremor of their voices when the incident was brought up. Hopkinsville, however, actually celebrates the invasion the third weekend in August as the Little Green Men Days.
We should go there for my birthday sometime.
Yeah.
Just to check it out.
Yeah, be fun. It was 2010, and citizens of Kelly, a farm town of 300 people in western Kentucky, were brainstorming ways to make some money. They had founded a neighborhood watch group and thrown community barbecues, but it all had been paid for out. But fuck me.
Mush mouth.
But it all had been paid for out of pocket. That was not sustainable. So they started sifting through the town's archives for something in its history worth marketing. It came down to the train tracks of the aliens, resident Joan Smithy, or Joanne Smithy, told the Washington Post. They went with the aliens.
Well, obviously, what's up with the train tracks?
I don't know.
Are they haunted?
I have no idea. So Smithy's group, Kelly Community Organization, turned the Kelly Hopkinsville Encounter into the Kelly Little Green Men Days Festival, a celebration with aliens and flying saucers that coincide every year on the shootout's anniversary, August 21st, 1955, or Ashley's birthday.
Well, 45 years before, no, 35 years before Ashley's birthday, no.
I don't know.
I'm so fucking bad at math. 55 to 90. 45 years.
Yeah. Yeah, 45. No.
Yes.
35. Yes.
For real?
35 years.
No.
No, I don't know.
That's so... You're 39.
38.
You'll be 39.
Yes.
You are... I'm having a little bit of an existential crisis right now.
It's 35 years.
Yes, 35 years before I was born this happened. I'm 31.
Yes.
That's just like... You think of the 50s... I think of the 50s as being so long before I was born. But it's the same amount of time since I've been born.
That's true. From now. Yeah. Anyway, the incident and its ensuing coverage helped to solidify the idea of aliens as little green men in popular culture. Although Taylor and the Suttons described the aliens as little silver men, newspapers ran with little green men instead. Because why not?
Well, why do you think that they would be gray and have great big eyes? Because they're farther away from the sun.
Yeah.
They need less pigment in their skin to absorb necessary energy from the sun's rays.
Yeah.
And you need big ass eyes to be able to see in that dim of light.
Yeah.
I mean, listen.
That may be because the idea of little green aliens had been around since the 1920s. With the birth of science fiction. There are those who still don't think the incident was science fiction, however. There are millions of stars and planets in the universe, said Geraldine Sutton Stith, the daughter of Lucky Sutton. I can't possibly believe ours is the only planet with life. Today, Stith is determined that the world hears her family's side of the story. The remaining survivors of the encounter refuse to talk about the incident, so Stith does it for them. In addition to her books on the encounter, Alien Legacy, 2007, and The Kelly Green Men, Alien Legacy Revisited, 2015, she speaks at Kelly's Little Green Men Days Festival every year.
Wow.
The annual festival draws a few thousand people, and the story remains enticing to producers looking for the next big thing. For example, Steven Spielberg's classic film E.T. supposedly has its origins in the encounter. Other films, including Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Signs, Gremlins, Critters, and The Poltergeist, and Poltergeist, were also inspired by it.
Poltergeist. It's about a demon.
I know. I don't know.
That's a stretch.
It's been forever since I've seen it, so if I've seen it, I don't know.
Fascinating.
Yeah. An episode of the History Channel's Project Blue Book focused on the incident, and there's a new movie entitled The Visitants, which is set to start filming later in 2021 about the encounter.
Wow, who's going to be in it?
I'm not sure, but I researched it, and it says it's in pre-production. So, I'm not sure. And where are the visitants filming? None other than Hopkinsville, Kentucky.
Oh, wow, they're actually going to
That's pretty location. Awesome. Perhaps they're hoping for another extraterrestrial visit. If you encountered an extraterrestrial, would it make you afraid-ish?
Probably. I mean, I'd be lying if I said no.
Yeah, I mean, anything different that you're not used to on this planet is probably going to scare the shit out of somebody.
Well, then there's always going to be the question of what are their intentions.
That's true, yeah.
You know, like when the English came over on the Mayflower and they tricked the natives into thinking that they were good guys, but then they just, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's not fine. I was talking specifically to Paul. He was giving me hand signals. I need to speak louder.
Anyways. So yeah, that's my story. And do you want to read the personal experience?
Yes. Can you give me a second? I don't want to leave this unfinished. I'm almost there.
She's crocheting as we do the podcast, so.
Yeah. And I have like 10 stitches left. I can't just leave them hanging.
I still have an unfinished blanket in there that I did, but that was left unfinished, what, 5 years ago?
Longer than that?
Shit. Anyways, so this next part that Ashley's going to read is a personal experience about what might have been ghosts or extraterrestrials.
Fascinating. I have not read this. I've not seen it. I don't know what I'm about to say.
So she's cold reading this. She has no idea what the fuck it is.
I don't know if I'm going to hate him or not after this. Am I going to hate you?
No.
Okay.
All right. So this article, this personal encounter was written by Donald Patton. And here we go.
This is a first-hand account from legendsofamerica.com. I'm going to read it as it is from the writer's point of view. First, let me say that I am a 29-year-old male from Kentucky and a skeptic when it comes to ghosts. I believe that there must be a logical explanation for everything, though it may be logic when we do not that we do not currently understand. If I asked about UFOs, I would have to say that though, again, skeptical, I feel the possibility is far greater than that of spirits of the dead walking among us. The reason I mention this is that this story falls somewhere between UFOs and ghosts. I want to assure you that as God is my witness, this is a true story. It has recently been in my mind and really scares me yet today. My story begins late one evening in midsummer about 15 years ago. At that time, I had a very strange habit. I was absolutely obsessed with throwing rocks. I would spend hours engaging in my hobby, particularly at a spot about 60 yards up the hill behind my house where there were many rocks. Because the summer days were getting very hot, I adapted the habit of waiting until evening to pursue my odd hobby. It was a ritual that I had been repeating every night for about a month. At 14 years of age, I was a rough and fearless boy, and all the ghost stories in the world would not have kept me from my love of stone throwing. So on this particular night, I was out on the hill, sitting in my usual spot, and happily throwing away. I had been doing this for about an hour, and it was just beginning to get dark when I heard the front door to my house open. I knew that my father was coming out to tell me it was getting dark and to come on in so he could go to sleep without worrying me, without worrying about me. Predictably, he came around the house and stopped at the bottom of the hill yelling, "Donald, Eric, come on in, it's getting dark and I want to go to bed." Eric is my nephew, who was about 9 years old at the time. I continue to sit mumbling, alone, huh, okay. My father then walked a bit closer, saying, Donald, Eric, you boys get in here now. Then I stood up and replied, Eric is not up here. He's in his room. I'm the only one up here. My father then continued up the hill, asking, well, who are those people you were talking to? I responded, no one. I am here alone. To this, a frightened look crossed my father's face. Donald, honey, are you sure Matt and Eric are not up here? He asked. Matt was a friend of Eric's. No, I replied. Matt's not even here tonight. He then said that there had been someone behind me, and hadn't I seen them? When I said no, we began to look around the yard. After searching the property very thoroughly, we went inside the house to confirm that every family member was where they were supposed to be. They were. We woke up my brother, who got his pistol and went up the road to see that there were no strangers in the area and to make another search of the yard. All the while, my poor father was strangely quiet and looked so frightened. I had never seen him this way before. It was not until the next morning that he had recovered enough to tell us the whole story. My father said that when he walked around the house, he saw two, quote, little people standing behind me, dressed all in white. He described them as looking like a damn doctor or something. He did not see me as I was sitting down, and he assumed that the little people, whom he estimated to be about 3.5 to 4 feet tall, were me and my nephew. When he shouted for me to come in the house, the little people ran around the side of the hill above me, then went behind some small buildings on our property, and he never saw them again. Now, it is important to know that our yard was fenced in two sections. The little white men, as my dad put it, were standing right behind me on the other side of the fence. However, when they ran away, they were inside the fence, hiding behind the outbuildings. So they ran into the fence?
Yes.
There was an open gate that went out into our yard, which was also fenced. They could not have gotten into our yard without my seeing them, and there is no way they could have crossed the fence as fast and would have certainly been heard by the dogs, which would have raised a ruckus. Afterward, my father admitted that the incident scared him worse than anything had ever before, so much so that for months he would not go out after dark without being armed. Though I saw my father's fear, I was still not afraid until he said to me, "They were standing there looking right down your shirt collar. That scared me some." To this day, I haven't a clue what those little people were. I often wonder where I would be if my father hadn't come out that night. I also wonder how many other nights they might have been there before.
That's a pretty creepy story.
Yeah. No me gusta.
Could you imagine just like being outside alone, like by yourself, like in our backyard, we have a little fire pit, like sitting there and like not knowing that somebody could be right behind you like that.
I literally have nightmares about that same scenario. Yeah. That's why I don't go camping.
Anyways, I think that's it for our stories.
Not bad.
So, yeah. So if you have any stories or requests of anything you want to hear about, or if you know anyone who does, please email us at afraidishpodcast@gmail.com, Instagram and Facebook at afraidishpodcast, and Twitter at afraid_ish. Visit the website at afraid-ishpodcast.com. All the links will be in the show notes, and I'll have obviously pictures for social media.
Yay! If you're not following Afraidish Podcast on Instagram, do.
Yes. I forgot the last few episodes of what I'm drinking. Mm-hmm. I always assume I'm drinking a beer because I am.
Yeah.
Every time I record.
Every single night that we record, he has a beer. I am drinking herbal tea.
Yes.
I have a little bit of a head cold, which is funny because this happened exactly the same time last month, and it was... Sorry if you're squeamish, that time of the month.
Yes.
And it is also that time of the month now. Yes. And I'm sick again. And oh my God, I never want to be sick on my period ever, ever, ever again. It's miserable. But my tea is really good. I grow a lot of my own herbs.
Yes.
This one has pineapple sage, lemon balm, and a basil called Blue Spice Basil, which has like a fruity vanilla-y fragrance. It's
nice.
Tasty.
Don't we have like a shit ton of basil all around the yard?
Yeah, I gotta get out there and harvest it because I want more of this fucking tea. It's so good.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'm drinking my regular Michelob Ultra Infusions lime and prickly pear cactus.
Yeah, it's pretty good for chick beer.
Yeah, for chick beer.
Which I like because I'm a chick, I guess.
I just like it. I don't drink to get drunk. I just relax and...
It's low calorie.
Yeah,
it like, is. It was when we were doing the keto diet, it was one of the only beers that was actually approved.
Yeah.
So.
I need to go on a diet again. Shit.
You don't need to go on a diet. You just need to...
I just need to work out and not be lazy.
And eat... Your wife needs to cook you better food.
Before we go, I have a special shout out to Steve, who is a listener and was a coworker. Happy retirement.
Woohoo! Happy retirement!
Yeah. He always made me smile when he passed by and said hi, and he used to say, hi, Polly.
Aw, Polly.
Yeah. So, Steve, I know you're listening. Happy retirement. And... good luck, buddy.
Happy retirement, Steve.
All right, let's get out of here.
All righty.
And as always, don't be afraid of the dark.
Be afraid-ish of what's in it.
Bye.
Bye.